So with Peter Berkowitz of the Hoover Institution, my colleague, writing at Real Clear Politics about a book published, We Win, They Lose, Republican Foreign Policy and the New Cold War, by Atlantic Council colleagues Matthew Kronick and Dan Negrea. And Peter then takes this into the immediate future. Donald Trump is one of two possibilities for president in the year 2025. So what is the recommendation of putting together the successes of Ronald Reagan, fighting the first Cold War and winning it, and the speculation about how Donald Trump would conduct himself in what I think is fair-minded at this point to say is the second Cold War? What does it look like, Peter?
Well, it looks like something different than many Republicans imagine right now. Kronick and Negrea emphasize, however, that what appear to be two camps within the Republican Party, those who think that Donald Trump's approach to foreign policy has superseded all of the predecessors within the Republican camp, and a smaller group who think Reagan remains the gold standard, really they suggest that they can see emerging, crystallizing, a fusion of the two. What does that fusion look like? Well, in the first place, both camps, the Reagan camp within the Republican Party and the Trump camp, actually do believe in peace through strength. They believe that we should have a strong military. They should believe that we, at least as a last resort, should be prepared to use it to advance vital vital national interests. And they accept that the world's a dangerous place and we are likely to have to use it. Second, the synthesis commends what the authors call free and fair trade. What does that mean? Well, as it's well known, Ronald Reagan was a great champion of free markets at home and free trade abroad, an extension to the international arena of principles of the free market. And people think of Trump as a president who wanted to impose protectionist policies in order to defend America, American manufacturing base, or to rebuild it against threats of globalization. So people see a divide between Reagan and Trump. But the authors say, no, both are defenders of free and fair trade. That is, Trump's free market credentials are neglected, and Reagan's insistence that that the partners with whom you're engaging in free trade also have to be engaged in practices of fair trade. So from their point of view, when Donald Trump demands that the Chinese engage in mutually fair practices, Donald Trump is not departing from Ronald Reagan's legacy. He's enacting Reagan's legacy. And finally, and very briefly, both presidents believed in American exceptionalism. All they meant by this was that they take great pride in America's traditions of freedom, and that they believe that America is better off in the world, and the world's better off when America takes a leadership role.
This two-track approach would apply to Russia, Iran, and North Korea. So North Korea is in here. We're dealing with the so-called axis of resistance, which are authoritarian military-based states. Russia's economy is now said to be a war economy. China outbuilds everybody in terms of warships and ballistic missiles and nuclear weapons. So let us come to the authors highlight three transnational issues for American strategy. The first is strengthen our ties to our allies. What a good idea that is, Peter.
Yes, it's as you know, John, your study of classical history. It's an old notion that one should be one should come to the defense of one's friends, and one should be ready to firmly defend against one's foes. This is the view of the Trump-Reagan fusion, and they add a crucial point. The defense of the free world may involve is likely to involve the United States entering into partnerships with countries that are not perfectly free, indeed are authoritarian. But this compels the authors to recognize that there's a fundamental difference between, say, the Islamic Republic of Iran and the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. What is that fundamental difference? The Islamic Republic of Iran has declared that the United States is an enemy and has done everything it can to undermine America's interests in the Middle East. The Kingdom of Saudi Arabia has made clear that it prefers to work with the United States and, for that matter, Israel. And the authors want the United States to pragmatically take that important difference into account and to cooperate with an authoritarian, let's call it middle power, like Saudi Arabia, provided that Saudi Arabia is willing to cooperate with us in defense of an international system that recognizes sovereign nation states.
And the second recommendation, this has to do with the statement by, I believe John Kerry said this early on, but in any event, it's a policy statement in general, that the greatest threat to the United States is climate change, as opposed to the ballistic missiles now parked in northwest China or the aggressor in Ukraine. Climate change. What is the recommendation for dealing with what appears to be climate change?
The author's first recommendation is to realize that climate change is not the number one national security diplomatic challenge. Their second recommendation, and this is crucial, is not to enter into toothless treaties that would allow the world's greatest polluter by far, China, to go on its merry way, and would meanwhile shackling the United States at tremendous cost, especially to America's middle class and working class. Instead, the authors recognize that the best way to effect a no doubt desirable transition eventually from a fossil fuel-based economy to economy based on renewable energy is to unleash the tremendous powers of the free market. Already there are 16-year-olds out there who understand that developing a battery that can retain the energies, the unlimited energy of the sun for long periods of time, that 16-year-old will one day make Steve Jobs and Bill Gates look like paupers. And they are likely to provide, those 16-year-olds are likely to provide sources of America's transition much more likely than government programs and climate treaties.
I've been enjoying myself with ChatGPT 4.0. When we get to ChatGPT 20, all we have to do is ask. ChatGPT is going to, you can ask it to argue with itself over climate change. It's quite fun. All right, but let's be focused here. Security. That is about immigration. And right now, what's happening at the southern border is nobody's solution. What do the colleagues recommend?
It's very straightforward. Any self-respecting free and democratic society should control its borders, just as you and I have to show papers when we come into the country. We have to show our passports. So should people who want to immigrate go through legal procedures. So they're in favor they are lawful pro-immigration, and they want our immigration policy to focus on, the kinds of immigrants who would be most valuable to American society right now. That includes high-skilled workers who can help the United States in various industries that are crucial to America's prevailing in the new Cold War.
So depend upon allies. Trust the marketplace to develop in competition with others. Solutions to long-term problems, and have a border that means something when people arrive in the United States. Nothing here sounds too extreme, Peter. Is that on purpose? We have 30 seconds.
Yes, it is on purpose. The author saw no reason to invent a new foreign policy. What they've done is distill the best principles of traditional American foreign policy and apply them to the decisive challenges of our day.
Peter Berkowitz is the Tad and Diane Taub Senior Fellow at the Hoover Institution on the campus of Stanford University in Palo Alto. He served as Director of Policy Planning Staff at the U.S. State Department from 2019 to 2021. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor,